This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by PRMI, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
We've known for a while that the crime stats coming out of the Seattle Police Department are not all that accurate. Not all crimes, but certain crimes. We're not talking about murders. We're not talking about arson. We're talking about the kinds of crimes that impact people, but they don't report it, knowing that it's not really going to go anywhere, not due to the fault of the SPD, but due to the Seattle City Council gutting the Seattle Police Department and not allowing them to actually do their jobs. So that when you are a victim as an individual of a break-in in your car, you know, either through past experiences or through friends' experiences or family members' experiences, that when you call to report it, you're not going to get an officer coming by within 10 hours, if they ever come at all, because they are understaffed. The resources just aren't there. And so a lot of people just say, oh my gosh, it's just not worth it. I'll spend the $110 or whatever it is to get my window fixed. I'll call one of these mobile glass companies. They'll come by, they'll fix it, and I'll just go about my day. This is just what happens when you live in Seattle. Well, the same thing is happening with businesses. Same thing is happening with businesses. Aaron Goodman, for example, is the executive director of the Soto Group. Soto, of course, being the neighborhood around Lumenfield and T-Mobile Park, that for any of you who drive through Soto or Pioneer Square or Belltown or Capitol Hill, really, I mean, actually, the list goes on, you realize that things are not going well for this neighborhood. It's not safe. Tents everywhere, homeless people everywhere who are clearly dealing with a mental health issue that's not being addressed, or an addiction that very clearly is not being addressed. It's very obvious. Erin Goodman, talking to her membership, the businesses that this group represents, keeps hearing about how unsafe it is. And yet when she looks at the SPD data, it's not a reflection of the crimes.
We can't ensure safety in our business district. It doesn't feel like the picture that we were getting from the police department fit what we were hearing from our businesses. 30% of the businesses that we surveyed said yes, they had lost employees due to public safety here in Soto.
They've lost employees at a time during a pandemic because they were too scared to come into the office. The Soto Business Improvement Area survey also found 70% of those surveyed said their workers feel unsafe. 3 out of 10 businesses have had employees quit, as you just heard, over non-COVID-related public safety concerns. This went out to 1,200 business members. 78 companies responded. The numbers that you actually get from SPD or the city, whatever it is you're looking, the official data doesn't give you a good enough look, an accurate look of what's going on. Because a lot of the businesses aren't going to report. Russ Meyer, for example, who works at Ben's Cleaner Sales, he told Como TV that he is scared that repeat offenders who know they're not going to be incarcerated after they're arrested, if they're arrested at all, he's scared that they're going to retaliate.
It's very disconcerting to even, like, to pick up the phone to call the police because you know nothing's going to happen. And those people are just going to retaliate more. So you're more worried about the retaliation versus protecting yourself.
Imagine that for a moment. Someone breaks into your business. Someone maybe assaults one of your employees. You know that that person's going to be almost immediately released thanks to policies that we have in place. That they can blame COVID all they want, but it's policies from Pete Holmes, Seattle City Attorney, or Dan Satterberg, King County Prosecutor, again, depending on the type of crime, that results in that same person being just immediately released. And they know who called them. They know who called the cops on them. So they're just going to do the same thing over and over and over again, and maybe it escalates. And so what are these businesses supposed to do?
It is not SPD's fault at all.
That's Todd Beisold. He's the CFO over at Merlino Foods. This is a regional supplier to restaurants, and they just had one of their trucks burglarized. And he's not blaming the SPD because he knows the reality of the situation. It's not their fault. They're not the ones making the decisions on charging. And if members of the SPD had their way, they would be fully staffed. But we have an alarmingly low staff rate right now of deployable officers. The lowest we've had since at least the early 1990s. And on top of all of the safety issues that he's dealing with, well, there's that other issue that's tied to the safety. Insurance. That's a major issue, just getting insured.
Because a lot of carriers don't want to insure in the Seattle area. We were down to, I think, two or three carriers to even choose from last year. They just don't want to do it.
Which means it's very expensive to get insurance. Really expensive to get insurance. So he tells Como TV that in order to prevent his insurance rate from skyrocketing even more than they already have, he has to put up a high threshold before he will file any kind of theft loss claim. Because it just keeps happening over and over and over again.
Over $30,000 or $40,000, or otherwise I'll eat it, because in the long run it's cheaper. If you can't get insurance, you're out of business. That's the end of it.
There are so many issues that are intertwined here. So many issues that are intertwined. And we've said it before, we'll say it again. No one in this city is highlighting this on a political level. There's no sense of urgency in tackling this issue. There's no one even remotely coming close to talking about it. The only time the Seattle City Council talks about businesses is when they're looking to demonize them. They're all big corporations and they're screwing over the little guy, the worker. We need to tax them more. Merlino Foods needs to be taxed more from the council's perspective. They can barely afford insurance rates right now, or they wouldn't be able to afford them if they actually reported all of the theft that they go through. Every time they do those reports is another bit of an increase in their rates. And it tells these insurers, hey, probably not even worth it at this point looking into this neighborhood. It's too expensive. Meanwhile, people are still on the streets, not getting punished for their crimes. And then you've got homeless people who are not getting the help that they need. And you've got employees who dread going into the office for reasons unrelated to work. But Seattle is a thriving city. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
As of right now, you can get a COVID test over at SeaTac Airport. It actually started yesterday. Port of Seattle officials say you can get two kinds of tests.
One is the 15-minute test, and then the other is the 72-hour, which they would send out to the lab.
Yay! Except it's expensive. It's really expensive. That 15-minute test costs $200. That 72-hour test, a lot cheaper, which is actually kind of weird because the 72-hour test, the one that you send out to a lab, actually involves people doing work and then getting you the results. That one's $75. Still expensive, but obviously not $200. Now, part of the reason why you're doing this is because you want to ensure that you don't have COVID. I don't know if a 15-minute rapid test is all that important, because when you get to Seattle, right, let's say you're traveling from Orlando, you land and you've got some concern over COVID. Well, part of the concern is probably related to your travel, right? So a 15-minute rapid test that comes when you land, presumably you're taking it that day. Well, if you were exposed on that plane somehow, or exposed at the Orlando airport, or even exposed within a day or two before heading to the airport, it's not going to show up on that test. So I don't necessarily know what the value is there. I don't get that. Now, if you just want to go there and buy the test and then take it a couple days later, which would make more sense as far as your exposure leading to some kind of actual symptom, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. But this, I guess, is a good thing. Let's hear again from Wendy Ryder. She's the Director of Security, Emergency Preparedness, and Fire for the Port of Seattle, talking with our sister station, Kyle Radio.
We felt that it was part of our Fly Healthy program, another layer to offer to our passengers and employees to stay healthy.
I mean, okay. So now you're going to charge $200 to your employees for a 15-minute rapid test? They say it's the first site on the West Coast for the company doing the testing. And they say they'll be able to do more than 500 a day if you do the testing the way that they have it set up. So, yeah, I guess the 15-minute one, you have to do it that day. You have to do it there. The testing site is open 7 days a week. It runs 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So make sure you're not on a red-eye flight. And all you have to do is go online to make the appointment. I will not give you the website because you're not going to – you're not going to go. Okay, fine. ExpressCheckout.com, and Express is spelled with an X. I'm sure you're going to overwhelm the website and it's going to crash because of all of your interest. Right? I mean, no one's doing this. I'd be very surprised at anyone who does this. Very surprised. Just go ahead and get your vaccine and then you won't have to worry about any of this stuff anymore. Oh, no. Sorry. Even after the vaccine, you have to wear 14 masks. Yeah, we got it. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
More and more parents are paying close attention to what's going on at their schools in Seattle, thanks to my reporting, obviously, that's gone national. Thank you, Tucker Carlson. Thank you, Faulkner Focus. Obviously, we've been talking about this for a couple days now, where in Seattle, some schools are just simply overwhelmed by homeless encampments. Homeless encampments that pose a very clear danger to these students because you have no clue who's in these tents. I know there are folks on the left who want to pretend simply that everyone who's homeless, they're just like you and me. They are just down on their luck through no fault of their own, which, of course, is just a nonsense talking point that's meant to signal virtue. We obviously know that there are people who are living out on the streets due to a fault of their own. Sometimes not, but also sometimes due to a conviction, for example, maybe of child molestation. We've certainly heard the stories about how hard it is once you get out of jail to go ahead and get an actual apartment to rent. And so some of those people end up homeless. And I imagine that if you are a child molester, going to an encampment in a park attached to a school might be some prime real estate, made easier thanks to the disinterest in sweeping them, or demands not to sweep them, by the Seattle School Board President, Chandra Hampson, and the director, Zachary DeWolf. Now, is everybody in these tents child molesters? No. How many are in there? I have no clue. Could be zero. Could be all of them. We have no clue who's in these tents, although we do know what they do in these tents. We do know that drugs are involved because when I went to Meany Middle School in Capitol Hill, I stepped on a syringe. Now, thankfully, it didn't have a needle attached. There's lots of trash everywhere, and it's not safe. It's not safe. So whether we're talking about Meany Middle School or Broadview Thompson Elementary, parents are paying close attention.
You got to keep the kids safe no matter what, and this isn't safe.
That's Serena Evans talking to Cairo 7 TV. She's a parent.
I knew it had gotten bad, but I didn't realize how out of control it was. I just think it's a recipe for disaster.
Our schools are getting set to reopen, and we're sending them, not just the kids, but the staff, into a really bad situation.
This isn't benefiting the kids, and it's not benefiting the people who are homeless. The people who are homeless are not getting treatment.
No one wins here. No one. And yet, you've got really, really blind ideologues like the school board president, Chandra Hampson, and the director, Zachary DeWolf, demanding that no one from the city clean up any of these tents. Chandra Otis is the principal at Meany. And she was told that the homeless camps would actually be moved away from camp. She spoke to Como.
I had heard at some point that the camps would be moved before we started school, and they are not moved.
They're definitely not moved. And if you want to watch some of the video, just go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/JasonRantzShow. Ton of video there. I went on a tour. No commentary. The video speaks for itself. And she says family members are concerned.
I do believe, and I have heard messages from my family, that it is a major concern, and some of the families do not want to have their students return because of the encampment.
So you've got all of these kids who had to be kept out of school for a year, not able to see their friends, not able to learn, truly learn the material, because remote classrooms don't work. Now they can't go back, finally, when the schools open, because of the homeless encampments that are just raging out of control. And the mayor, Jenny Durkin, says this is beyond her control because the city can't go in and simply clean up property that they don't have any jurisdiction over. The idea is that the jurisdiction here belongs specifically to the actual school district and the school board, and they're the ones who are getting in the way. Isn't that a shame? Isn't that a shame? Because right now, it seems to be a stalemate. They're not leaving. They're not leaving on their own.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rantz Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. It is 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. Here's how this works. We ignore Seattle, and we spend all of our time talking about stories that impact you and the communities you live in and care about most. Because, let's be honest, the media here hyper-focused on Seattle. And we start in Snohomish and Pierce counties, because maybe to some of you this might be a shock, but the rental market has not improved during the pandemic in those areas. In fact, according to Zillow, it increased. Now, it didn't increase a ton. In Snohomish County, it increased $16 a month. In Pierce County, a little bit different. $105 a month on average, rent has increased. And that, of course, can be incredibly significant to some folks.
There was definitely just kind of two different paths that diverged for rents in the region. Kind of those more affordable middle class and working class renting communities never really got a break on rent during the pandemic.
So that's Jeff Tucker. He's a senior economist over at Zillow. Why is this happening? What is at stake? What is at play? It's pretty obvious if you've been listening to the show during the pandemic. It's very obvious. The suburban areas have been set up really, really well to deal with a pandemic, especially when we're talking about working from home. Remote work is best done in homes or apartments that are bigger. And you're not getting those big apartments in the city that we don't talk about during this segment, Seattle. And what's been going on in Seattle this entire time? Crime has been going up. Homelessness is going up. Everything is closed or was closed. You're not able to go to your favorite restaurants or the movie theaters or concerts or theater. The parks are unusable because of the homelessness crisis. Going on a simple walk means you're dodging tents or risk getting mugged. So a lot of people decided, hey, if I have to work from home and I got to spend all of this time at home and I can't go out, does it really make sense to spend $2,900 a month on a 500 square foot apartment? That doesn't make sense. And so they moved. And so they looked towards other communities. And if you were already kind of on the fence as a family, maybe looking around already, living in Seattle, thinking, oh, maybe I'll go somewhere else. Maybe it's time to buy instead of rent. When you look at cities like Puyallup, Milton, the gem of Pierce County, if you look into Bothell, if you go into Linwood and Shoreline, all of a sudden, you're getting some what you believe to be really, really great deals where you've got a lot more space, so better bang for your buck, and you have access to the outdoors in ways that aren't completely overrun by the homeless.
These were places where there were some advantages to renting there during the pandemic. It was places where you had more access to outdoor space, playgrounds and just sort of outdoor amenities.
Very fair point he made to Q13. Now, at the same time, you've got some people who are struggling. And there are groups like Roger Valdez, who is, he's not a group, he's a director of a group, an activist group. And they're working on getting rent relief to the people who might actually need it or facing some difficulties during the pandemic. But the problem is he doesn't think that it's going to get to people in time. And so he's working to make sure that that happens.
What we're headed for is not a tsunami of evictions or mass evictions. What we're headed for is really a lot of unpaid rent and higher rents for people that are living in rental housing now and into the future to absorb all that unpaid rent.
Maybe they should move to the city of Edmonds or at least get a job in Edmonds, but a very specific job, because the city of Edmonds has become the latest to grant their grocery workers more pay, hazard pay. Tracy Long from Cairo 7 TV.
The ordinance requires larger grocery stores to pay each worker an additional $4 an hour until Governor Inslee lifts the state of emergency. Grocery workers in King County, Seattle, and Berrien are also getting hazard pay.
So not only did they get early access to vaccines, which now protect them from the virus, we're going to continue to pretend that they are at great risk of getting COVID due to their jobs after being vaccinated. And we're going to continue to call this an emergency for however long Jay Inslee wants, because his power is unchecked, thanks to Democrats. It's almost like this is a giant scam. Thanks to the unions, the power that they have to make sure that their people are getting paid more, even though they're not taking on more responsibilities, even though the grocery stores itself, they are taking on greater costs. It is remarkable. This is absolutely remarkable how much of a scam this is. Meanwhile, other people who are working, who didn't necessarily have early access to the vaccine, well, guess what? You don't get an increase in pay because you don't have a union scamming the city government behind your back, behind our backs. Although, I guess in this case, it's all up front. This is such a scam. Oh, my gosh. God bless them. God bless them. Here's two vaccines. We're giving them to you earlier than everybody else. You'll be protected. You'll have a 90 to 94% protection rate, but we'll still give you higher pay because what you're doing is hazardous. Yeah, okay. That is a scam way of thinking. It's not a literal scam because guess what? They're doing it the right way. They're doing it the legal way. This has been tried in front of a court, and the court ruled against the grocery stores that tried to push back against this. So this becomes Edmonds is now the first city in the North Sound to go ahead and implement this. And it's going to spread. It's going to hit all of King County. And then soon Pierce County and Skagit County and Thurston County. Snohome, it's just going to go all across. Let's just pretend. Let's stop pretending that that's not what this is all about. This is an end around. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text message. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Let's to the Jason Rants Show, where not everything is racist, because we don't subscribe to that absurd belief that is being pushed right now by folks on the left. Too many folks on the left. Some folks who technically are on the left but don't really represent the Democratic Party. They represent a wing of the party that's trying to take over the party. And if the Democrats don't wise up to this very, very quickly, they're going to find themselves in a position where there's no turning back. And you've already started to see some of the moderates within the party push back over the last election. They said, whoa, 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 we should have done so much better in these House races. We should have been so much better. Why didn't we do well? Because of the crazies. But then you still have some of the older Democrats who are part of the establishment, who understand that you have to placate the crazies in the base. Otherwise, you're not going to have a united party. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the two leaders on the Democratic side, constantly try to placate the AOCs of the world, the squad members and worse. But ultimately, it's going to lead to the party's demise as we know it. And they're going to have some sort of course correction at a time where, and this is good for us, the party just gets booted out of power. And that's where they're headed. And for that, certainly I'm looking forward to it. I'm grateful. But it's doing so much damage to this country in the process, where virtually everything is now being considered racist. And CNN, of course, is trying to placate into that crowd. They're trying to play into that line of thinking. They're trying to be the woke scolds that they love to be. They love to word police, and now they love to font police. CNN is insane. Everything is offensive to CNN and that crowd. And so now they're claiming that fonts are racist. They had a tweet that is being widely mocked by, frankly, both sides. And the tweet simply says, "For years, the West has relied on so-called, quote-unquote, chop suey fonts to communicate Asianness," in quotes, "in food packaging, posters, and ad campaigns. But such fonts perpetuate problematic stereotypes." So does a font perpetuate stereotypes? A font? What's the font? It's a style, right? And I'm looking at the font. We've all seen this kind of quote-unquote chop suey. I've never actually heard it referred to as that, but okay, fine. The chop suey font. We've all seen it. And yes, when I look at it, it reminds me of an Asian culture, because it's based in the truth of Asian culture and that kind of font. Or I believe it's branded that way, and now that's how I look at it. I don't look at that and say, I don't like Asians now. That is a stereotype. What is the stereotype? It's so weird. The author of this piece, her name is Anne Quito, or Quito. And by the way, the actual title is Karate Wonton Chow Fun, The End of Chop Suey Fonts. And she urges readers to close their eyes and imagine the font they use to depict the word Chinese. And she writes, "There's a good chance you pictured letters made from the swingy wedge-shaped strokes you've seen on restaurant signs, menus, takeaway boxes, and kung fu movie posters. These chop suey fonts, as American historian Paul Shaw calls them, have been typographical shortcut for Asianness for decades." Which, by the way, understand, because I've seen this kind of font on Asian-owned restaurants. So I guess they're self-loathing. She then explored the history of the fonts and how they've evolved. And she writes, "It's hard not to cringe at the Chinese stereotypes bundled with each font package, especially when seen through the lens of today's heightened vigilance towards discrimination and systemic racism. Critics believe that using chop suey typefaces is downright racist, particularly when deployed by non-Asian creators." Which is funny, because she's saying "particularly when," which means it's also racist when Asian folks, again, presumably since she brought up the restaurants and menus. So a Chinese food restaurant owner who uses the font is a racist, even if they themselves are Chinese. And she barely found any examples of like white politicians using the font. And yet she writes, white politicians, meanwhile, have been using chop suey fonts to stoke xenophobia for over a century. Guess how many examples she listed. From the past 144 years, she used two examples. Two examples. And yet she says white politicians have been using these fonts for over a century. She then evokes Nazis, noting that the Fruchtor font, quote, was considered as an expression of nationalism and ended up getting banned. And all the way down in this really, really long story, all the way down there, is this little tiny piece of a tidbit, as Fox News calls it, that is kind of interesting and worth noting. In fact, it says it. It's worth noting that in 1930s America, some Chinese immigrants themselves used chop suey fonts on their restaurant signs, menus, and advertisements as a way to heighten the exotic appeal of their establishment. Now, a lot of people, I guess, who read that article didn't agree with that notion. Because people on their comment section or on Twitter were just like, come on. Oh, my gosh. This is so ridiculous. And people rightly called it out. Not everything can be racist, but they want it to be so badly. And they will jump through hoops to try to make a point. And I read this piece. It is really long. And it tries so hard. And in a way, it connects to what we talked about yesterday. Here in Washington State, they end up passing this bill that says high schools can't use Native American mascots unless a tribe essentially says, yeah, well, thumbs up, we'll give you permission. It is a ridiculous place to be. But it's coming out of this belief that cultures cannot be shared, that if it's not your culture, you can't use any aspect or even appreciate any aspect of it because it's racist. It's called cultural appropriation. Now, folks on the left hold that position because they like to say that there's no such thing as a white culture or an American culture, that the culture of America is actually defined by individual group cultures that are not supposed to be shared, even though the whole point of calling this country a melting pot is to say that all of these cultures are supposed to blend in together and be shared amongst groups and appreciated amongst groups. But they are going back on the left. They're going back to this time where you can't do that. It is cultural segregation. It's cultural segregation. And when you decide to do that, when you decide to say only one culture can, or one group, one ethnic group can appreciate and use one culture, all you're doing is creating an us versus them. That's all you're doing. And you're defining people by putting them in boxes. I think that that's wrong. And I think ultimately it's going to lead to actual segregation. And we're already seeing a lot of that right now, especially ideologically, right? We see echo chambers getting created. Seattle's a perfect example of that. There are so many people who don't have any conservative friends. None. And as a result, they become closed-minded. As a result, they become arrogant. They don't understand the other side. They bully anybody who has a different opinion because they are not understanding the other side because they're not exposed to it. Meanwhile, they'll say diversity in the workplace, super important. Multiculturalism, super important. You need more X, Y, and Z members of the community represented on your school boards, represented in your boardrooms, represented in the mailroom. While also saying, hey, you, white dude, stop enjoying the culture of another group. They don't know how to pick a lane. But when you cut off each other from enjoying each other's culture, all you're doing is segregating the groups. That doesn't seem to be a healthy position to be in. But that's white dude talking. Although, again, I'm Jewish. I'm not a white dude. But the left doesn't view Jews anymore as minorities. That's who put that on the list of things. But that of course, is not bigoted at all. That's justified because we have too much power or some nonsense. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. And send me a text. 1-800-465-877. You got another hour of the show coming up. Don't forget, I'll be on Fox News Primetime. The video will be up shortly on my YouTube page. Just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-877. Back with more at the top of the hour.